Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown for Wednesday, May 31st, 2023, and we hope that you have a big smile on your face because it's National Smile Day, and it's also National Parrot Day. So if you want to repeat everything I say, please feel free, but the only thing you won't have to repeat is this wonderful batch of news that we've got coming up, because these are fresh stories that you haven't seen anywhere else, and we're excited to be bringing them to you. I'm Tom Hollingsworth, I'm your host, and joining me is one of my favorite co-hosts, Mr. Chris Grendeman. Chris, welcome to the show.
Ah, thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you here, too. And if you want to come visit, it's National Autonomous Vehicle Day, so just hop in that robot-powered car and head over. But speaking of automation, we want to kick off with this fun little story, because Red Hat Summit was the big event that happened last week. And one of those big announcements from the show happened around Ansible, one of everyone's favorite automation platform. The first announcement was Ansible Lightspeed, which was an AI-assisted code creation platform powered by IBM Watson, everyone's favorite Jeopardy player. Users can input natural language prompts, receive YAML code in response for playbooks. Ansible also is going to be getting an event-driven capability in version 2.4 that rolls out next month in June. This increases the number of ways that users can activate Ansible scripts across hybrid cloud platforms. You can trigger scripts to run based on things like outage information, service ticket creation, and even if your configurations are drifting apart from each other. Now, Chris, I know that you've worked a lot with Ansible in the past, and hybrid cloud is one of the areas that you spend a lot of time researching. What do these new Ansible features really give potential users when it comes to the power of harnessing Red Hat for hybrid cloud?
Yeah, I think this is really cool. And I mean, maybe obviously to a lot of folks, this follows on the heels of many other announcements and projects and applications around this same thing of applying large language models and generative AI to make interfaces more intuitive and to make programming easier, right? So obviously some folks started playing around with this on OpenAI's ChatGPT a while ago and figured out that you could get network device configurations, security device configurations, and even code out of that box. OpenAI has since released Codex, which is more targeted to actually generating code. And then we've seen kind of a flurry of other folks kind of piling on in really interesting ways, right? So there's GitHub's Copilot. Microsoft has now put IntelliCode into their Visual Studio. The DeepMind kind of Google partnership thing has come out with AlphaCode. There's AWS with Code Whisperer. There's even WP Code, which helps you with WordPress and HTML and CSS. And there's a long, long list. If you search around, I'm sure you can find more and more of these. And so this is kind of, in some ways, yet another AI coding tool. But I think it's good. I think that this is making things more approachable. And especially when you talk about network automation and creating YAML files, this seems like a really practical way to use AI and this kind of intuitive, kind of intent-based interface to tell it what you want to do and get these YAML files kind of created for you, or at least have help along the way. Like I said, especially in networking, where it's not necessarily developers who have spent, decades like kind of learning YAML as a language. It's usually folks who are trying to get practical problems solved right now. And or Ansible goes obviously beyond the network as well to other infrastructure. But, folks who are infrastructure engineers and not developers, getting this kind of a boost, I think, is really, really cool and makes it much more accessible to a lot more folks. And also, even if you do really know what you're doing with YAML, you still make mistakes, right? And so having, this this tool, like Lightspeed, Ansible Lightspeed, kind of looking over your shoulder and checking your code as you go is nice and reassuring, right? It helps make sure that there's not going to be those kind of fail at scale, crazy automation events because you've got everything checked and looked at it ahead of time. This is actually part of Red Hat's Project Wisdom, which is a bigger collaboration with their parent company, IBM, to give Ansible new capabilities through a trained AI model. So it'll be interesting to see how this develops as well. I think we'll probably see more of this type of stuff, both from Red Hat and from others. And then, the other piece of that you talked about, this event-driven automation, also very, very, very cool, right? This takes Ansible to another level of having these triggers, right? And so just to kind of roll back on that, right? Event-based automation is really kind of the next step, I think, in getting closer and closer to self-driving infrastructure. And so what this means is when something happens, something else happens automatically, right? Where a lot of automation is, human driven, where you go and you say, okay, I want this, network deployed. I want this server, set up. I want these VMs deployed. And event driven says, oh, we're going to check. We're going to watch and see what happens, and then do things. As you mentioned, right, some of these things that could happen would be maybe password resets, or compute and storage adjustments, augmenting service tickets with additional information. You mentioned, you know, addressing configuration drift, doing regular backups or backups when storage gets to a certain level, this kind of thing. These are error-prone tasks, and event-driven Ansible can reduce those. It's really cool. They've kind of, you know, essentially connecting the infrastructure and applications to these observability tools. And they've got a pretty good list of partners coming out of the gate. There's Cisco ThousandEyes, CyberArk, Dynatrace, F5, IBM's Instana, IBM's Turbonomic, Palo Alto Networks and Zabbix are all in here. And then they've already got systems integrators trained on this. So Kendrel and Worldwide Technology and several others have already been trained. So it'll be really cool to see this all rolled out in the world, especially when you start to see these combinations of things happening, right? So the Lightspeed kind of giving you that AI help, event-driven, you don't even need to be involved. You don't need AI because it's just going to happen automatically. And they also made some great other announcements this week. The Red Hat Developer Hub, which is going to streamline development by creating kind of an opinionated framework and some curated tools with languages and resources. Red Hat Enterprise Linux Insights Updates is going to aim to reduce complexity across the hybrid cloud. Red Hat Service Interconnect is going to make it easier for developers to migrate apps across environments and communicate across container clusters and different networks. And there's a few other updates that are really, really cool, including some OpenShift AI upgrades as well. So neat stuff to watch from Red Hat, and definitely some great improvements on the Ansible front. In other news, Mirantis announced a new feature to help manage Kubernetes this week. A Lens Control Center is a follow-up to their successful Lens Pro release last year. Lens Control Center has enterprise single sign-on capabilities, centralized management of Lens Pro deployments, and accounting and billing enhancements. Lens Control Center is aimed to help companies successfully scale out their deployments of Lens and Lens Pro to keep their Kubernetes farms corralled. How big of a news is this, Tom?
Well, I think it's a really important development in this whole thing, and you should definitely go read the Gestalt IT article that we linked in the show notes from our staff writer, Shalagna. She did a great job of kind of summarizing it. But the one thing that I want to talk about here is the fact that you literally are watching the evolution of a minimum viable product. I mean, Mirantis came out with Lens to manage things. Then they came out with Lens Pro to manage even more stuff. But if you want to think about Lens Control Center in the vein of old technology, this is essentially vCenter. And think about how many VMware admins out there live and breathe and exist only for vCenter. Like the idea of having to connect to a server and manually manage it just kind of gives them hives. And that's ultimately what we're seeing here, is that as Lens and Lens Pro have become more popular options for managing Kubernetes deployments, they need a manager of managers. And that's what this offers. And yeah, when you look down the list, it doesn't sound that exciting, right? Single sign-on, customized billing. You know what? Heated seats don't sound all that exciting in a car until it's wintertime and you need them. And that's what this offers, is the capability to say, well, now I can sign into all of my Lens Pro with one centralized SSO database, or, you know, I can connect to an SSO provider so that I don't have to manage all the individual instances. That is magical if you've ever forgotten the password to one of your instances. Then the billing. Billing is probably one of the most ridiculously boring things you can do. But as I am fond of telling a lot of people, especially outside of work, it's not over until the paperwork is done. And that's what this gives you. Because this mythical type of chargeback thing that we always hear, you know, well, we want to know what's being consumed and we want to know which departments are using what. That is a real thing in the cloud, because this is no longer consuming on-premises resources that are sunk costs. The electricity ran for an extra hour last night because we were running a really hard query. Who cares? We were paying the light bill anyway. But now that particular instance that someone upgraded to using, like, you know, 8 cores and a terabyte of RAM because it completed 20 seconds faster cost you an extra, what, $8,000-$9,000? Yeah, you're going to want to know that. And so by creating these kinds of things, you can authorize people to do certain things or to not do certain things and manage it centrally. Also, one of the things that I thought was kind of neat in there was network connectivity. you can actually block certain instances of Lens Pro from accessing outside networks like the internet. That might be important for audit purposes. This Lens Pro instance can only be managed from inside the network. It is only allowed to be managed inside the network because it contains regulated information or it's deploying services, and we just don't want it to be able to contact the internet. Like, those are the little things that matter from going from a thing to a solution platform. And I applaud the people at Marantis for doing this, and you kind of building the piece, seeing how it's deployed, building the next piece to kind of incorporate that feedback, and then, you know, eventually creating the manager of managers kind of thing. So definitely check it out. If you're someone who uses Marantis and you have a deployment of Lens or Lens Pro, if it's big enough, you're going to want this for sure. But like I said, also check out the article from our staff writer, because she did a great job of kind of telling you why you need it if you're not already using it. All right, Chris, the email security team over at Barracuda Networks need to come up with something quick, because they have announced CVE 2023-2868, which is a backdoor that allows for remote command injection that's been actively exploited since last October. The exploit can ambush operations teams when you have a specially crafted tar file that will allow you to inject commands and take over the device. Barracuda suggests that you burn the affected device and ship it back to them to be replaced. And let's just hope that no one is going to be saying, "Oh, Barracuda," at the end of the day. Chris, how big of a deal is this for people who are using Barracuda's email security appliances?
I mean, definitely the request to send stuff back and get it replaced makes this sound pretty terrible. Obviously, as you said, right, the headline here is a critical Barracuda zero day actually used to backdoor networks for over 8 months. And there's evidence that data was actually exfiltrated. The vulnerability was identified in their email security gateway, so the ESG product, on the 19th of May. Luckily, so far, at least, no other Barracuda products, none of the SaaS email security services were part of this vulnerability. It's just the actual ESG appliance itself. And they did roll out a patch to eliminate the vulnerability to all ESG appliances worldwide the next day, Saturday, May 20th. Although then there was a second patch on the 21st. And as you said, now there's everybody's been contacted and there's a recommendation to send things back. So, I'm not sure how far those patches went. And if you're using an ESG appliance, you probably want to talk to the folks at Barracuda pretty quickly and figure this all out. As you mentioned, this is all about tar files in attachments, right? So the vulnerability is in a module which initially screens attachments of incoming emails. And if you actually have a file name formatted in a particular way, the attacker can execute system commands through this QX operator, which is a function of in the Perl programming language that handles quotation marks. Big deal. And then, as we mentioned, the thing that makes this worse is it's not just, a vulnerability that's been identified and put out. This is something that has been exploited. So they found evidence of actual data exfiltration. And they've found, to their credit, several different malwares that have been used in these exploits. They've got some cool names. There's Saltwater, which is a Trojanized module for the Barracuda SMTP daemon that contains the backdoor functionality. They've got CSPI, which is a persistence backdoor. They found CSIDE, which is a Lua-based module for the SMTP daemon that monitors the SMTP commands, the hello and elo commands. And very, very interesting set of malware. If you want to check that out, if you're into those kind of things, kind of take a look and poke around there. Pretty interesting. But yeah, the recommendations right now is, ensure the ESG appliance is receiving and applying updates, but also discontinuing the use of compromised ESG appliances and contacting Barracuda support to obtain a new ESG virtual or hardware appliance. So if you're not affected and you're sure you're not affected, apparently the patches may work. But if you have been compromised because these other malwares come in behind the compromise, it's toast. So that's it. So yeah, definitely a big deal. If you've been compromised, you got to send those back. And, not a fun announcement for Barracuda to have to make, but HPE did make a slightly better announcement recently. They've released their quarterly results this week. Results were mostly in line with expectations, although there was a miss on their previous guidance. The big news here, I think, is that HPE Aruba Networking rose to become the second biggest division of HPE by revenue, sliding past storage for the first time. Given the focus of the deepening of the relationship between the two during Aruba Atmosphere last month and the announcements coming during HPE Discover in June, Tom, what do you think that this means for the future of HPE?
I think it means that the talk that we heard during the Aruba Atmosphere keynote, where HPE Aruba Networking is kind of growing past their visibility as a wireless company, but also growing into becoming an integral part of what HP is doing, is a very critical thing. I mean, when you think of HPE, what do you think of? Compute and storage, right? And to be fair, if you look at the breakdown in the graph that's in the show notes, compute is still, by and large, the biggest part of what they do. But when you think about a world where a lot of things are more focused on hybrid cloud, public cloud, the areas where you would typically make those investments in infrastructure aren't there anymore. Like, you have to legitimately ask yourself a question. Do I want to buy new servers or do I want to rent them from the cloud? And that's a hard question to ask, right? But when you move to the other side of the coin, well, connectivity is still king, right? Do I need to have edge connectivity, whether it's wireless for my users or SD-WAN / SASE / SSE for my remote offices to be able to get online to access those resources. When I think about, you know, being able to put in challenging RF environments with things like private LTE and private 5G, which, you know, HPE Aruba just announced their acquisition of Athonet. Like, what is happening inside of HPE Aruba Networking is going to become a huge piece of what eventually HP becomes. And I mean, when you look at the storage revenues, yeah, they were down. Some of the individual parts of storage were up, like the individual products themselves. But I think that overall, what you're seeing is the industry recognizing that the connectivity pieces are going to become very important. And that while compute is an important resource, whether you're selling it to companies that require on-prem solutions or selling it directly to people in the cloud, you're going to have a way to access that. And so that's going to continue to build on that strategy going forward. I firmly expect that we're going to see some big announcements around, you know, HPE Discover. There's talk of AI stuff. It looks like, you know, a lot of other companies are trying to kind of partner with, you know, NVIDIA and other organizations to kind of add to the AI mix. And we'll actually talk about one of those in just a minute. But I think that ultimately what you're going to end up seeing is that networking is going to be that silent moneymaker for people, that as companies are looking, oh, you know, how much bandwidth are we going to have to push in order to consume these resources? How much does it require for cloud AI generation? Oh, wow. We need to upgrade our infrastructure. And that's where you're going to start seeing companies like Aruba and a lot of other ones starting to make a lot of money. All right, Chris, we had one thing we wanted to take a little bit of a closer look at as we hinted at it. Red Hat Summit was not the only big event last week, because the other one was Dell Tech World. And it's in part because Dell is rolling out initiatives to address key areas of their technology offerings, because a lot of those technologies are starting to move closer to the cloud. The first one that was talked about was Dell Apex Storage for public cloud. It's a software-defined storage platform that works with AWS and Azure. It integrates their existing tool set to provide a hybrid multi-cloud experience. Also announced was Dell Native Edge. It's a software platform that can help manage deployment of applications and devices to the edge of your enterprise. And in addition to that, as they are now doing, they announced a new project. That is Project Fort Zero. That is not a Fortinet product, by the way. It is their implementation of Zero Trust Network Architecture. The last big announcement, as I alluded to in a previous story, was that NVIDIA is looking to partner with them on Project Helix. What is Helix? Helix is a Dell server, PowerEdge server, running H100 GPUs. You know, those big, hungry, massive AI drivers that are, you know, the industry is all crazy about. And NVIDIA, at their big announcement this week, rode that to being a $1 trillion company. So, you know, there's a lot of excitement about that. But Chris, I want to come back to kind of the Dell aspect of things. Compared to something like Red Hat Summit, where, you know, they were very focused on Ansible, they were very focused on AI and stuff like that, Dell seems to basically kind of be spreading the love everywhere. It's like, oh, we're going to do some cloud stuff, we're going to do some edge stuff, and we're going to be involved in the AI. And I mean, they even announced they're doing a private wireless deployment. I guess that kind of competes with some of the stuff that Aruba's doing. What does this ultimately mean for Dell?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, I think. And I mean, to one, to be fair, right? I mean, Red Hat in general is a more focused, a kind of a smaller scope of what they're looking at in general. And then Dell has kind of grown some arms and legs over the years. It's definitely a far cry from, you know, ordering parts out of a catalog to get put together for you as a, you know, the PC builder they kind of started out as, what, however many long years ago. And a lot of this, I think, is, to me anyway, looks like, you know, a very strong physical infrastructure, you know, hardware provider coming to terms with a much more cloud-based reality. And how do you do that, right? And I think some of the way you do that is you try things out. And not to say that these are all experiments. I think a lot of this is really solid groundwork that's going to, you know, pay dividends going forward. But some of it's probably just, you know, putting those branches out a little bit and figuring out where the, you know, where things match. Also, it's just the fact that Dell has kind of sprawled and grown quite a bit. And, you know, just the definition of what infrastructure is has changed over the years, right? And so there's definitely folks who are coming up in industry now who, when they think of infrastructure, they think of a VPC or of, you know, clicking buttons on a GCP or an Azure or a AWS dashboard and making things happen behind the scenes and not really understanding, you know, kind of the nicks and cuts and scratches that we may have had as older folks, you know, racking servers and plugging these things in. And so, you know, this is Dell, I think, finding its way in a pretty different world than it grew up in. This stuff's pretty neat, I think. You know, there's some really cool announcements tied in here. I do think that, you know, even though it may sound a little scattered, there are some really neat stuff here going on, and they're kind of staying on top of what's going on, right? I think this view towards multi-cloud, which, you know, people can, you know, be for it or against it, but really, I think if you're not building your own cloud, then multi-cloud is definitely the way to go from a vendor perspective, right? Let's tie these things together. Let's make sure that we are, you know, CRAS compatible across all of them. That seems like the right focus. And building these tools over the top of the public cloud. It's interesting, right? And I don't want to go too far away from Dell, but to me, you know, this multi-cloud stuff, which we're seeing more of in this Dell announcement, is really interesting as how this will shake out. You know, at one time, the internet service providers had a really powerful position, and you had to be on their network to get different services and to get different connectivity. And over time, they kind of got commoditized, and they've bemoaned the idea of over the top for a long, long time. And this multi-cloud stuff is to me, looks a lot like over the top, right? Let's build these, you know, virtual storage systems that ride over the top of multiple clouds, and they kind of squish down the value prop of the cloud providers a little bit, maybe. And of course, if I'm Dell, that's what I want to do. I want to make sure that I'm at the locus of the value creation. I do think, you know, just to touch on one more thing before I hand it back over to you, Tom, the Project Fort Zero looks great to me. And again, this is one of those things where they're building it into all of their other apps and products. Now, this maybe will take some time to get there, and the capability isn't even released yet. It's going to be released sometime in the next year. They say it will be validated by the U.S. Department of Defense. But building zero trust network access, least privilege access into kind of all of your apps and products is a great move. I wish more folks would do it. And I think, you know, tying that all together, right, this kind of looks like Dell has a fairly coherent vision of where they're going in this kind of new, maybe scattered infrastructure world.
And I think that it's an important distinction that we draw here, that this is not a grand strategy by Dell that has a flowery name and launch promo, whatever. This is Dell looking at where the pain points are in the journey and tweaking the knobs a little bit, if you will. Like, are you going to be able to outcompute AWS? Probably not. But if their storage solution is non-optimal, or you have data that needs to move back and forth, AWS doesn't care. Just deploy an outpost and run our stuff on your site. Dell understands that that's a problem and it needs to be addressed. And so I applaud them for that. Like, edge connectivity is a hot new thing. I mean, we have an edge field day now for that very reason. but it's not an easy solution. I mean, you know, zero trust network architecture is just the evolution of stuff we've been trying to get deployed for years, whether you call it NAC or, you know, least trust or whatever. We're slowly getting there, and Dell understands that. And I think it's, to me, it's kind of telling that Dell is like, well, hey, we can jump into the party here and offer that, considering, you know, kind of where the solutions that Dell offers for networking are on the mix. I mean, I was literally thinking about that the other day because someone said Dell networking and I was like, huh, really? So I think that that's great. Obviously the AI stuff is the AI stuff, and that's going to happen. But the fact that Dell is recognizing that there's more to this than just building big workhorses to run AI workloads, what develops around that? And I think that that is ultimately going to be an important challenge. And if you look at the way that they're offering these things, you know, discrete projects that get built into products a year later, VMware is doing the same thing with a lot of their project stuff. I wonder why. I think that DNA is kind of shared between the two organizations, which may ultimately end up being a good thing. But when you look at what Dell is really trying to do, they're trying to provide an integrated solution that they can go to as a partner and say, we can get you online from wherever you are, we can ease your journey to the cloud or keep you in a foot in both worlds if that's what you need to do. And, you know, we also can partner to the bigger corporations out there to kind of run their workloads as they need them. And I think that ultimately that's Dell's survival right now, is offering a bridge between those two organizations from an infrastructure perspective. Because let's be fair, we are in 2023. The organizations that were all out for cloud are there. The ones that are still struggling with that transition are just not sure. They don't need a partner that's going to walk in with an army of consultants and be like, all right, we're cutting these cords and we're moving everything into AWS and that's that. They need someone who can go, well, yeah, it makes sense for you to do that here, but if this is an issue, you need to keep it over here, but here's a platform to manage both of those. They're going to do a lot better job than, let's just throw it out there, someone like an HPE GreenLake, you know, because when you look at what these announcements are, a lot of these are positioned to kind of compete with HPE. They're offering cloud services a la GreenLake. They're offering edge connectivity a la HPE Aruba networking. I mean, right down to the fact they're offering a private wireless solution that they're partnering with another company on. If you'd have told me 6 months ago that Dell would be offering a private wireless, private LTE solution, I would have checked my coffee to make sure that I wasn't drinking ketamine in it, because that's the kind of hallucination that someone comes up with out of nowhere. And yet here we are now, Dell has a private wireless solution. So if you deploy it, you can get, you know, your warehouse online or something like that. I like the moves. What I don't know is how they're going to pay off ultimately. I want to track what happened at Dell Tech World against future conferences, specifically HPE Discover, to see how the messaging differs. Is it, you know, going to sound the same with, you know, search and replace terms? Is HPE going to come up with a different strategy, like a unified front for how to do this versus Dell's kind of point solutions? I don't know. And I don't know which one the market's going to respond to. Maybe the market's like, hey, I've solved all my other problems, but I need this Apex software storage thing. I'll just go with that. And the rest of it we can pick up later. Time will tell. And that's the thing, is Dell is one of the companies that has enough time to kind of try this out. Smaller providers, smaller organizations really don't. And one would hope that this is enough to kind of keep Dell relevant in the conversation, which ironically enough, it's Dell. Like, how could you have imagined that this was a conversation that we would be having anytime? And yet here we are with most people talking about cloud this, cloud that, you know, build my own, roll this, do that. And then you got Dell and HPE and a bunch of other companies kind of sitting over on the side going, we want to play too. We have experience in this. I hope it all works out for them. Well, that'll just about do it for this episode of The Rundown. I want to thank Chris for co-hosting with me as well. I just wanted to let you know about a couple of things we got coming up, because it's a jam-packed couple of weeks. This week, right now, actually, Cloud Field Day 17 is happening over in Boston. There's great presentations happening today and tomorrow from a lot of companies like Haiku, Jetstream, Morpheus, Rackin, Zerto. If you want to head over to techfieldday.com, you can check that out. Next week on June 6th and 7th is my own personal favorite, Tech Field Day Extra at Cisco Live. I'm actually flying out to Cisco Live this weekend because there's so much stuff going on. I have to get there a day early to figure it all out. But we will have great presentations coming to you from our friends at Cisco, as well as Backbox and OpenGear. And then Security Field Day 9 will be happening at the end of June. We'll have two great days of presentations, June 28th and 29th, with some great presenters. If you want to learn more about who they are, techfieldday.com is the best place to go. Chris, if people want to learn a little bit more about the stuff you do, where can they go to learn that?
Yeah, the best place, kind of hub for everything, is chrisgrundeman.com. But I'd love it if you also checked out the Imposter Syndrome Network podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts.
We will be back next week with more great content. It'll be Steven and a co-host, because I'll be at Cisco Live, but I'm sure that he's got some great insights lined up. And if you have news stories that you'd like us to cover on the Rundown, please submit them. Just tweet at GestaltIT, use the hashtag Rundown. Rest assured, at 12:30 Eastern time, we'll be back with more great stuff. Until then, for Chris Grundeman, Tom Hollingsworth, Stephen Foskett, the rest of our crew, thank you very much for tuning in. Have a great day and a wonderful week. We will see you soon.